Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM, Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, Cooperative Radio in British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, February 2nd, 2013. I am your host, Jackie McIntosh, and I am joined here in studio today by my co-host, Alyssa Ray.
Hello.
Welcome. Animal Voices is Vancouver's and Western Canada's only animal advocacy and vegan radio program, bringing you all the animal and compassionate-related news, events, interviews, lifestyle, and commentary you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and internationally. We at Animal Voices encourage the movement toward a world in which animals are treated with compassion and mercy and are afforded the respect that humans take for granted. This program can be heard every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and is also streamed live at coopradio.org and available as podcasts on iTunes and animalvoices.org after airing. For our first interview today, we will be talk with Liz Marshall, a Toronto-based filmmaker. Her current project is the soon-to-be-released feature film, The Ghost in Our Machine. It focuses on the work of the globetrotting animal rights photojournalist Joanne MacArthur. Liz will also be a speaker at the Animal Advocacy Camp this weekend, and we'll talk more about that later. For our second interview, we will be speaking with James Levesque of Tribe of Heart. Tribe of Heart is a wonderful organization that makes beautiful, heartwarming, and inspiring documentaries with the intention to awaken compassion and peaceful action amongst everyone. Animal Voices recently hosted a public screening of their film Peaceable Kingdom, The Journey Home, and I have to say we had an amazing response from all who attended this event, so this is going to be a great interview as well.
Yeah, it was a big crowd too. I think we mentioned it on the last show, but I wasn't here. I was just so happy to be part of that, and I'm really glad we can talk to James today. I wanted to mention what I did last weekend. I went to the 21st Annual Wellness Show in Vancouver. It's a three-day convention, and their tagline is helping you find balance. So they offer seminars, workshops, cooking demos, and a huge, huge hall filled with all kinds of exhibitors. And I was there because actually Tim Aretz from the show, my partner, was actually doing a cooking demo. He was a celebrity chef there, which is pretty cool. I don't really consider him a celebrity quite yet, but he got the opportunity because someone canceled at the last minute, and another one of the presenters, Aaron Ash of Gorilla Food, who's also doing a presentation, they asked him if he knew someone, and since Tim works at Gorilla Food, he got this great opportunity. So he shared, he got to do a cooking demo, half-hour cooking demo, and he did a cheesy roasted squash ravioli with apple white wine sauce.
I've tried that. That was delicious.
So good. Yeah, he did it at the Plate and Vayner's secret supper club that that we do out of our apartment, and it was a big hit there, so he thought he'd share it, and it was sponsored by Daya Cheese, so we incorporated that into the ravioli, and lots of people took recipes. It was a great success and a really great opportunity for Tim to get a little bit of exposure there. Then after the, I wanted to mention who else was doing demos. Just a little shout out to the vegan presence there. There was Drina Burton. She's a North Vancouver-based author of best-selling vegan cookbooks, including Eat, Drink, and Be Vegan, Vive la Vegan, and her latest Let Them Eat Vegan, which actually reached the top five list of all books on Amazon.ca last spring when it came out.
That's impressive.
I know. so yeah, she was there, not on the day that we were, so we didn't get to see her. And there was also Sasha Gray. She's a vegan chef, permaculturist, and wellness coach, and co-founder of Balanced Wellness Retreats. She did some raw vegan cooking there, as well as Aaron Ash, who was promoting his new book, Gorilla Food, Living and Eating, Organic, Vegan, and Raw. So those were some of the highlights just from the cooking stage. And it was really great that there was a presence there. And then after our demo wrapped up, we walked around the whole layout, and we actually had a pretty good time and didn't really expect to enjoy it as much as we did. There's so much there. There's a lot of really all kinds of things. There's like, you know, from financial advisors to like you know, fashion and accessories to, you know, the health food stuff and all kinds of alternative therapies, you know, from chiropractors to energy healing to...
All about wellness.
Yeah, but it was really, really, really broad and almost, like, confusing. You're like, why are they here? What is this place? Like, it was all so, so mishmashed in there. But there was really was, like, something for everyone. And there was actually a whole lot of seminars and workshops I noticed after I went there, some of which I would have liked to attend on things like meditation and, you know, different kinds of methods of exercise, like Zumba or, and, you know, spirituality, eco-fashion, even wellness in relationships and stuff. So, yeah, there's a lot there for sure. And, I did one thing. Well, after our chocolate show last week, I talked to some of the chocolate people who chocolate vendors and who were giving away samples and stuff, and I asked them where their chocolate came from. And some of them, a couple of them actually got, and I won't say names, but got really defensive. They were like, our chocolate comes from Holland. Stop asking me
There's no
silly
child
questions.
Slavery.
Yeah. And anyway, but I was really impressed by Giddy Yo-Yo, which is based out of Toronto. They seem to be like, have they extensive knowledge of where their chocolate comes from, like an amazing workers co-op, I think, in Ecuador. And yeah, I love them. So, oh yeah, and I also wanted to mention that there was, it was sponsored in part by the dairy industry. The Dairy Farmers of Canada had a section called All You Need Is Cheese, and they did 13 hour-long seminars throughout the weekend, which had room for about 60 to 70 people, and they gave out cheese samples and recipes and everything. And I just thought that was super duper disturbing and desperate.
Efforts.
Anyway, yeah, that's it.
All right. Well, at least there was some vegan options out there.
Yeah, for sure.
So we have a few things coming up in our neighborhood. So we have Vancouver Vegan Prom that is taking place on March 9th at the Wise Hall. It will be from 8 p.m. to midnight, 19 plus only event, so leave your kids at home. And it's a great event for everyone wanting to get to know more people in the vegan community or just have a great night. Dress like your favorite superhero or just dress in all out in your prom gear. And today, Friday, February 22nd, Dr. Olivier Baravel presents Learning Without Harming Animals, Alternatives to Humane Education at the Arbutus Club in Vancouver from 3 to 6. There is no entry fee, but donations are always welcome, and refreshments will be provided. To RSVP, please email adavsociety@gmail.com. So if you have an animal-friendly event that you would like to have announced on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
If you didn't notice there, you are listening to 100.5 Co-op Radio, CFRO, in Vancouver on unceded Coast Salish territories. And I have another event, of course. It is today, Friday, February 22nd, and that means that this weekend is the Animal Advocacy Camp. It's the third year for this great event, and we are very excited. It's a full two-day event happening at UBC in the Student Union building there. And it's basically a time for anyone who's working for animals or who wants to start working for animals to get together and brainstorm and make things happen. So the idea is that we're sparking discussions, people are networking, and we are strengthening the animal activist community here in Vancouver. I think it's the premier event of the year, and it's completely attendee-led. So all the participants get to set the agenda and host discussions to talk about what we want to talk about. Very exciting, and you can go to animaladvocacycamp.ca to learn more about it. The person who Jackie just mentioned, Olivier Baravel, will be there speaking, and also Twyla Francois, who's the director of undercover operations for Mercy for Animals. She has a lot to share. And another person who's going to be at the camp is Liz Marshall. She is a Toronto-born and based documentary filmmaker who spent her childhood summers on the west coast of BC. She's directed documentaries shot all over the world on issues like the right to water, HIV/AIDS in sub-Saharan Africa, gender, corporate globalization, sweatshop labor, refugees, and dance and music and art. So she's got a wealth of experience, and her most recent project is the soon-to-be-released cross-platform feature-length documentary about the globe-trotting animal rights photographer Joanne MacArthur, who we featured on the show in September of 2012. The tagline, or actually I haven't even said, it's "The Ghosts in Our Machines." This is a very hotly anticipated documentary. I know I'm looking forward to very much. It was such a pleasure to speak with her on the phone yesterday. So we have an interview with her we will share. And I wanted to say the tagline for their movie is, "Are non-human animals property to be owned and used, or are they sentient beings deserving of rights?" Here's my talk with Liz Marshall, documentary filmmaker.
So first of all, thank you, Liz Marshall, for joining us today on Animal Voices.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And a huge congratulations is in order for officially completing the film.
It was February 14th that we walked out of the online edit suite with bags full of hard drives with all of our masters on them. So it was like a jubilant moment.
And what a fitting day, the Valentine's Day, the day of hearts.
the day of love.
Ah, beautiful. So let's talk about the film and kind of first what led you to work on it. It's my understanding that this is your first documentary featuring non-human animals and that you haven't worked on a project related to animal rights before. Can you tell me how you came to work on The Ghosts in Our Machine?
Okay. Well, as a filmmaker, you're right. I've been primarily focused on human issues, human-centric, human rights topics, subject matters around the world since the 90s, and also really passionate about environmental justice issues. But I've always been tuned in to the animal rights question, and I chose to become vegetarian when I was 19. And that was a long time ago. I'm now vegan as a result of the project. But my interest in the subject goes back probably many years. But I was always grappling with, you know, what the angle could be and how to create a narrative film experience, and not just a social issue film, but how to create a story that would be compelling for me as a filmmaker. And so I was really wrestling with, you know, what is the story? What is the story? And that's when it sort of all kind of clicked for me, was probably when I really started paying attention to Joanne MacArthur's photographs and just the power that each image holds and the questions that they pose, and anyone can look at those images and feel moved by them, and also in turn it invites you to reflect on your own personal relationship to animals. And that was really inspiring to me, and so I talked to Joanne about, you know, collaborating on a big film project. And at the time, I was just completing my last film, which is called Water on the Table, which features another great activist in this country whose name is Maude Barlow. So it was a process, is I guess what I'm trying to get at. And it didn't just arrive overnight. It was really a process that was germinating and incubating for quite some time. My life partner, Lorena Elke, is a very committed animal rights vegan activist, and so she's also inspired me along the way and been a great sounding board for me. So I hope that is the question.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. So you live close to Joanne, is that right? Is that kind of how you got to know her? You live in Toronto?
Yeah, we actually live in the same neighborhood, which is fun and very convenient in making this project. I guess I met Joanne maybe about 7 years ago, but it's really been through the process of creating the Ghosts in Our Machine that I've really, really gotten to know her, and we've become very good friends.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you share with us some of the non-human animals that you've featured in the film and the narratives you share about them?
Absolutely. So part of what is so epic about this process, this project, is that I didn't decide to just focus on one animal industry and delve deeply into that, into those shadows. But I chose to try to encompass the pervasive reality, which is that we as consumers in our modern industrialized world are essentially feeding this machine, which is not an abstract idea. It's the machine is us, and the machine that I'm talking about is this consumer-driven entity that is pumping out all of these goods, whether it's food or fashion or products tested on animals or the entertainment industry. And the victims within that system are the animals, the ghosts, who are predominantly unseen and hidden within the shadows of our highly mechanized world. So it was really that awareness that I had, which seems obvious probably to most of the listeners, but I really had the blinders taken off when I started to go deeper and peel back the layers and really immerse myself in this subject matter. And I just remember this moment almost where I was walking around. I think I was in an airport, and all I could see around me were bits and parts, ingredients of animals everywhere, people wearing them and eating them, and it was horrifying to me. And part of what was horrifying was the fact that I hadn't really had that resonant awareness before. It had never seemed as clear to me as it was in that moment. So the task then for the film was to try to communicate that in a way that doesn't dogmatically, frighten people, but rather invite viewers outside of the animal rights circle, so a broader demographic was always what I was interested in, because most people say that they love animals. So those are the people that I really hope will see this film. And I really wanted to try to tackle this phenomenon and this cognitive dissonance that we live in, which is that we love our pets and we value wildlife, but is that we consume billions of animals on a regular daily basis. And so that may seem fairly straightforward to many of the viewers of this show, but I think honestly where we stand today in our society with the resistance to looking at this subject matter, we wear blinders, and really the ultimate goal of the film is that it gently, but with integrity and with truth, takes away those blinders, and that that's actually the viewing experience from beginning to end. So by the end, those blinders are gone. And when you walk out of the theater or wherever it is that you've seen the film, you are forced to be in a very reflective headspace and, you know, have kind of a new awareness in a way. That's the hope. And then, of course, the hope is that that doesn't go away, that that remains, and that it filters down and it is something, you know, that facilitates a ripple effect, you know, because then you go and tell your friend or your spouse or your, you know, parents or whoever, and in turn they talk to their neighbor about it, and so it's really this ripple effect that we're hoping to be part of, because that ripple effect is happening around us right now. So The Ghosts in Our Machine, I think, is at the right time. It's happening at the right time, meaning I think that we're more primed as a society to receive it and accept it and to go further with it.
Speaking of journeys, I know that the project really wants to facilitate that opening and help people start that journey. Can you talk about how the Ghosts in Our Machine project is more than just a film, and about the website and the bigger framework of helping people make the transition?
Yeah, sure. So we are what you call a cross-platform or multi-platform project. It consists of the film. It consists of a magazine-themed website, which has a blog, and, you know, we have all kinds of regular activities that happen on our website. Also, social media networks. We have a very active Facebook environment, and it's really an incredible space for sharing and you know, people all over the world have liked our Facebook page since 2011. And we have what's called an interactive story that will be a companion to the documentary that will be launched at the same time that the film is launched. And it will be prominently featured on the homepage of our website. And it's created by interactive directors, The Goggles, who are actually from Vancouver. They're the former art directors of Adbusters magazine. We intend to foster robust, community-oriented dialogue and interactivity for the next 2 to 3 years via these different channels and platforms. So that's really exciting, because we're not just walking away from the project now. In fact, it's kind of just, in a way, it's a brand new chapter now. And it really involves, you know, meeting the people that get to see the project and having that interaction and making sure that there's some social action, talking points, some real deliverables that can be very meaningful for people. So one of the things that we offer is called the 5-day ghost-free journey. And we've been offering this for over a year. It's really great. And it's online on our website, theghostsinourmachine.com. And you can click on the tab that says ghost-free journey to learn about exactly what it is and sort of get lost in there, because there's a lot to read. It's a great part of who we are. It's an opportunity for people that are omnivore, pescatarian, or vegetarian to learn about a ghost-free consciousness. And ghost-free means vegan, basically, you know, not consuming any animal products whatsoever. And we have two coaches that are online for the five-day ghost-free journey, which happens every other month on our website. And their names are Rosemary Tarantino-Foos and Donna Oakes. And they just facilitate such an amazing forum that is non-judgmental, really welcoming for people, and transformative.
And I know it's very hotly anticipated in the animal rights community for all animal advocates and animal lovers. Everyone will see it, and many, many lives will change.
It's so encouraging and refreshing and inspiring, because I have to say I've never come across such a passionate, enthusiastic, and empathic movement, social movement. It's really forever tweaked my moral compass.
Born free and made stable, luxury and convenience. Born free and made stable, greed and entertainment. Born free and made stable, industry.
All right, that was a song by Canadian musician Kip Harness with his song Ghosts in Our Machine, commissioned for the Ghosts in Our Machine project. Before that, a feature interview with Liz Marshall, the creator of that film. Liz Marshall will be, of course, as we said, speaking on Saturday morning, February 23rd, at the 2013 Animal Advocacy Camp, bright and early at 9 a.m. We got to get our butts out to UBC. And they have free tea and coffee and treats and stuff. So they'll keep us caffeinated, and there'll be sugar and carbs, I'm sure. The Ghost in Our Machine film and interactive web featurette will be released in spring of 2013. Stay tuned. Judging by the trailer, it looks like an extremely thought-provoking and life-changing film. And Liz told me that every single person who worked on the film was changed by engaging with the subject matter, whether they went vegan, vegetarian, or are just way more conscientious consumers. So you are listening to 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver. And this is the Animal Voices Show. And I just have some news items for you. First, reported on cbc.ca on February 19th, earlier this week, RCMP on Prince Edward Island have arrested three people in connection with the death of 50 seals found on the shore on the southeastern tip of the island in January. No charges have been laid quite yet, but RCMP say the three face criminal charges of causing unnecessary suffering to animals. The three male suspects, age 15, 17, and 18, have been released to the custody of their parents until their next court date, which is scheduled for later in spring. The seals, many of which were pups, were discovered by a group of veterinary students on January 27th. In a subsequent necropsy on 10 of the animals, found that they had been bludgeoned to death. Some had not died instantly and had been left to die in the cold. Investigators executed 4 search warrants, resulting in the seizure of items they say are connected to the crime scene. Pretty gruesome. I found another depressing story. I do have a happy one, though. Researchers at Waseda University in Tokyo have developed a robotic rat called WR3, whose job it is to induce stress and depression in lab animals, creating models of psychological conditions for which they plan to test new drugs.
Animals are used, of course, throughout medicine as models to test treatments for human conditions, including mental disorders like depression. Rats and mice get their sense of smell severed to induce something like depression or are forced to swim for long periods. Those are just some examples. So this new robot they've invented, this tiny little robot-looking mouse thing, it basically kind of attacks the rat whenever the rat moves, and they found the most depression occurred when it happened continuously throughout youth, and they measured depression by the rat, like, not moving very much. Sounds really terrible. They said the robot's just been... has been developed just as new research out of Stanford University shows that the use of mouse models for human conditions has led researchers to find treatments for sepsis, burns, and trauma astray at a cost of billions of tax dollars. So it's coming out more and more in mainstream news that these non-human animal models to treat human conditions does not work. You may have heard that there is a big horse meat scandal in the UK. Hard to miss that one. I know we mentioned it a couple weeks ago, but really since then it's just totally blown up. 850 schools are pulling products from their supplier, and a big list of ready-made meals and frozen burger patties from various brands have been pulled from the shelves. Because it's found there was traces of horse meat in this food that was labeled beef. So people are pretty outraged about that. It's been reported that 50 tons of illegal meat containing horse and donkey has been found in the UK. And that's just what was seized from the docks and ports over the last 7 years. So that's just what was found, but there must be so much more. Horse found in UK supermarkets has been traced to a slaughterhouse in Romania, where a gang dubbed the Horse Mafia have reportedly been buying wild animals from peasants illegally for just like £10, or what is that, $20? I don't know. I don't know the conversion. These are then sold for vast profits to processing plants, where they passed off as beef in burgers and ready meals. So the buying habits of consumers are set to be transformed by the horse meat scandal. 6% of adults claim they know someone who's turned vegetarian as a result of the crisis. This was a large survey of about 2,500 people in the UK. Almost a quarter of shoppers will buy less processed meat, and more than a fifth have already started buying less meat in general.
If that's what helps them turn, then that's always a benefit.
Anything that kind of slams the meat industry is good. It's good media. I just kind of wanted to end with a bit of a happy story, actually. So a woman named Gail Daniel from Adelaide, Australia, gave CPR to an ailing pigeon and saved his life. The fauna rescue volunteer had been helping to nurse a frail ant-covered bird back to health for the previous 4 days at her home, and during an attempt to feed him, he started to choke and stopped breathing. She said she gave him probably 3 or 4 little breaths and pumped his little chest a few times, and he started to come back to life.
Aww.
Fauna Rescue Chairwoman Liz McGuinness said it was the first time in her 19 years with the organization she'd heard of CPR being administered to a bird. And I read something about that, and it said, you can do it, just be careful they might bite your little lips with your little beaks.
That's amazing, though.
And there was one other case I saw, an eagle once, like maybe a few years ago, had been revived by CPR.
Aww.
But Miss Daniel hopes Dennis the pigeon will be strong enough to release in a nearby park in the coming weeks. And that's about all the news I have today.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Every weekday from 7 to 8 a.m., Media Mornings brings you independent news and culture you won't hear anywhere else.
Daily headlines, interviews, countless local voices, and our Latin America report help you make sense of today's news from Coast Salish territories to global affairs.
Guests include David Suzuki.
Media become hostages of the corporate agenda, and thank God for the independent like you.
Indigenous activists like Pam Palmater.
This kind of radio show helps inform Indigenous and non-Indigenous people and hopefully inspire our Indigenous citizens citizens to take action.
Social justice advocates like Maud Barlow.
We are continue to be America's gas tank, although now we want to be the gas tank for the world.
Artists like Kenny Starr.
Change is created by lots of different types of activists.
Ray Spoon.
Gender is limiting and affecting everyone.
And authors like Michael Parenti.
The state is at the service of these corporations.
So tune in to Media Mornings, weekdays 7 to 8 a.m.
on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM and podcasting at w2media.ca.
For our feature interview today, we have James Levesque of Tribe of Heart on the show to speak about the impact of their award-winning documentaries Peaceable Kingdom, The Journey Home, and The Witness, and to discuss the humane myth. Hello, James, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Hello, Jackie and Alyssa. It's great to be here.
First of all, I have watched both of your films, and they both have impacted me deeply. When, why, and how did you come up with Tribe of Heart? What was the initial motivation, idea, and how did it all start?
Well, about 15 years ago, Jenny Stein and I, with whom I create the films, we were like a lot of people. We read the headlines and read stories about so many issues that are affecting our world. So much injustice going on. So much environmental degradation. And we were so troubled by the things that we were seeing happening. But we also felt very disturbed with our own role in this, because we were really on the sidelines and not really doing anything about these issues that so bothered us. Mm-hmm. And so at that time, we made a commitment to align our lives with our values and sort of turn everything upside down. And instead of pursuing a traditional career and the kind of success that our society encourages most people to pursue, we decided that we would make our lives about service to those who are most in need, service to the vulnerable beings of this world. Mm-hmm. And from that point forward, everything changed for us.
And are there particular issues, they're both shown in The Witness and The Peaceable Kingdom, The Journey Home, things that you've always cared so deeply about? Was there a particular moment when you felt a connection towards these beings and their sufferings? Why animals in particular?
Well, I think for both Jenny and I, there has always been, throughout our lives, going back to our childhood, there have been moments when we had a strong sense of compassion and identification with those who were being abused or experiencing injustice. So I think that's a thread that runs through our lives. And with regard to our filmmaking, there were several key moments of awakening and understanding that led to the types of films that we now make. And one story in particular, I think, that would resonate probably with a lot of your listeners is that early on in our process of reconsidering our lives, a friend of ours told us this really kind of remarkable story. It's a very simple story, and it was about a man whose job it was to drive animals in a transport truck to the slaughterhouse. And I think he worked in the pig industry, the pig exploitation industry, I should say, and he had been doing this for about 10 years. Day in, day out. And then one day, he was delivering a load of pigs to the slaughterhouse, as usual. And as anyone who's familiar with this knows, the unloading process is often very disturbing and violent. And it's just these animals know something bad is coming, and they're upset. And he was going through this horrible routine. And at one moment, there was a pig who just would not go down the chute. And as he had been trained to do, he gets out his electric prod and he shocks this poor animal. And that individual animal snapped his or her head back at him, and they had eye contact. And in that moment of eye contact, this truck driver said, this is the way he described it. He said, "I felt the hand of God upon me." And he had an instantaneous awakening to the injustice that he was participating in. And he made the decision right then and there that he would never do this work ever again. He was finished. This was his last day of being a part of this exploitation and death machine. And thereafter, he went to an animal organization, just showed up, and said, "How can I help?"
That's a beautiful... Oh, sorry. Keep going.
Oh, no. So, this story really affected us. It really... There was something about it that we recognized as being special, and we noticed that when we would share it with other people, they would respond to it very strongly as well. And we got this idea that the story of one person's awakening if it's told the right way, could affect the awakening of so many others. And so that was a moment when we began to realize that maybe as people with some expertise in storytelling and the arts, we might be able to create films that harness this power of the human conscience.
Absolutely, and that's a beautiful story, and I think that definitely details, you know, your incredible stories that you do share in these films. The Witness, speaking of stories, is an incredibly inspiring story of one person's own discovery of animal cruelty and his ability to spread the word and impact many people all on his own. It all makes it seem so doable. Can you tell me what kind of feedback you often get from this film, and do you have any particular story of it inspiring people into action?
Well, that's a great question. The Witness has been in release since the year 2000, and after all these years, it is still being widely used. It's still showing in film festivals, and it really has endured. And I think one of the reasons for that is that it tells the story of a guy from a tough background. You know, he's kind of the opposite of the stereotype many people have about animal advocates, the sort of the least likely person that many people would imagine. And yet he awakens to this issue, and he ends up taking, you know, his kind of tough background and his understanding of the way things are in the street and the sort of strength he's got from living a hard life, and he applies that to protecting and advocating for animals. And there's something so inspiring about this change he makes, because it's a change we all need to make. We all need to take our capabilities and our abilities and our knowledge and put them in service of making things right, you know, instead of exploiting the vulnerable, making things right for them. And I think that movement and shift in the film is so inspiring, it makes it timeless for many people.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of the changes that it's inspired, we've seen some really remarkable things over the years. We've seen people take, you know, one of the issues addressed in the film is the issue of fur, and we've heard many stories of people, even with fur coats they just bought, taking those coats right down to an animal rescue organization and giving them to the people at that organization and saying, use this fur, you know, to as bedding for animals that are injured and recovering, or please do something with it that actually helps solve this problem and provide comfort rather than, you know, being a part of this, you know, display and propagating this fashion that's so horrible. So people really stepping away from that. And we've seen artists and filmmakers who saw the film and were inspired to go on to do their own work on behalf of animals. And probably the most common change that comes about from watching the film is that people decide, like Eddie, you know, not because of me, you know, I'm not going to participate in this, and they decide to change their diet away from animal products and not to wear animals and basically not to participate, mm-hmm. to make the same change that Eddie made. It's probably the most common response.
So just personal changes, and, you know, every person can make quite a difference. Can you describe some of the challenges in your films, particularly Peaceable Kingdom, in getting some of your images and footage from inside factory farms and slaughterhouses?
Well, one of the things that is going on around the world, and particularly in the U.S., is that these exploitative industries are getting more and more aggressive about covering over the reality of what they do. And this is happening on every scale, from the large-scale industrial farms to small-scale farms. There are laws that have been passed here in the U.S. that criminalize normal investigative work. And so it makes it very hard for people to go in and get footage of things that are going on really all over the place and that nearly everyone in the society is participating in some way. So the investigative footage in our films comes from many different people, very often courageous investigators at the cost of personal sacrifice and really damaging their own psyches in many cases, going into these facilities and capturing this reality. And in our films, we focus not on the most extreme cases, not on things that are exceptional, but what we show are happenings that are very representative of what goes on every day in these facilities. And we're very careful to have every film audited by those who are very knowledgeable about the industry to make sure that what we show is typical, because we want to be able to say that to our audience. This is typical.
Okay. And Peaceable Kingdom, we just actually had a screening of this on February 14th, which is Valentine's Day. We had a wonderful turnout, and many people were thanking us as they left. And we had a few people asking what they can do to help or where to go from here. What are some steps you can suggest for people who want to become active in peacefully creating change?
Well, one of the things that we have noticed over the years is that this response that you observed is very common, and, you know, really how inspiring when people take in a message about a justice issue and the response is, what can I do to learn more and get involved and help change this? So in response to that, we created a website called peaceablejourney.org, and that website allows people to learn more about different facets of the issue, the animals themselves, the environment, how it connects to other social justice causes, and it also offers a number of practical steps that they can take to look at changing aspects of their own lives that may be participating in exploitation, and then also to get involved with spreading a message of awakening about this issue in society. So we have really listened to our audiences over the years and taken what we've learned from them and put it into a website that really is geared at helping them go on their individual journey. Everyone is on their own journey and has their own particular process for going through this. And we feel our job is to provide them with resources and opportunities to explore, you know, really what matters to them.
Absolutely. And can you talk a bit about how you got in touch with the human subjects of your films and how you decide on which influential people to have in your films in order to have the most impact?
Sure. Well, for documentary filmmakers, one of the single most important decisions that, you know, you ever make is the choice of the subjects of the film. And in our case, I will speak about both our human subjects and our fellow animals that appear in our films. both choices are very important, and when it comes to the human subjects, we're very focused on featuring people in our films who have personal integrity and who have been on an authentic journey of awakening, you know, who have looked inside themselves, seen something that doesn't feel right, and made the courageous choice to change it. And that change is so inspiring to be a part of, and it's also very challenging because the issues that they're facing are not easy. So telling these stories requires having great faith in the people who are behind them, and also understanding that each of those stories represents a larger story. For example, in Peaceable Kingdom, we have the story of Howard Lyman and Willow Jean Lyman, and their story really reflects the issues associated with large-scale industrialized agriculture and how that plays out in the lives of people who are involved in it. But then complementing that, we have the story of Sherry and Jim Vandersloes, who are small-scale farmers. And, you know, there are just as many problems and just as many moral dilemmas and, you know, painful realities associated with that. So telling their story brings out their individual personalities and journey, but it also helps throw a spotlight on the real problems associated with this so-called humane agriculture.
And I'm really glad that you mentioned that, because that leads us into our next question. I know you started the website humanemyth.org to provide well-meaning people with the truth behind the claims of humane, grass-fed, free-range animal products. Can you describe a little bit more about what such terms actually mean for the animals?
Right. Well, I think that those terms are really inventions of the animal exploiting industry to help draw attention away from the problems that are associated with all kinds of animal use and killing. So I think that this goes back hundreds of years, and even in many cases of human exploitation of other humans. There have been different kinds of approaches used to market the resulting products to make people think that they're participating in something that's actually wholesome and positive while drawing attention away from the essential injustice. And, you know, if you look at animal agriculture and animal use, if you step back and, you know, away from all these labels, think about what's really happening. You know, beings are being bred into existence. They're being forced into existence. And it's an existence where their entire lives, from the very first moment till the very end, are controlled by others for the purposes of use and profit. You know, that is not a situation that is going to result in the well-being of anyone. And, you know, these animals are bred into existence. They're physically mutilated and altered to suit commercial purposes. You know, they're very often have their reproductive systems altered, or they're forcibly impregnated. And the care that they received is all governed by their economic value. And when, you know, we have billions of animals, you know, it only takes a problem that costs a few dollars before the life of that animal isn't considered economically worthwhile, and they're killed often in horrible ways. And that, you know, getting to the killing is really the core of it, is that all animals involved in animal agriculture and all these different forms of use, you know, not just agriculture, but entertainment and, you know, scientific experimentation and all of these areas, where does it end up? When their use has come to an end, they are killed. They're the most precious possession of any being is their lives, their very lives, and their mm-hmm. very lives are stolen from them. Yeah. And that's at the core of it.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not really about how they're raised. They all end up at the same place. Are there any ideas for future projects with Tribe of Heart that you can discuss, or what are some of your future goals?
Well, there is a natural evolution to the films that we are making, and what's happening with our work is that we started out being focused on the journey of one individual's awakening, you know, such as told in The Witness. And one thing I forgot to mention is that if anyone would like to watch The Witness, they can just go to witnessfilm.org, and the film is available for free online viewing. And that film really talks about one individual's awakening. And then in Peaceful Kingdom, The Journey Home, we were really starting to explore the socialization process and how it is that people who are good at heart, good people, go through a socialization process that teaches them that this use and killing is necessary and it's righteous and it's what we must do, and how people work their way out of that socialization into following their own conscience. And I think the natural evolution for where we're going is to think about how such awakenings come together to eventually become a social justice movement, and how to connect the social justice movement for the liberation of our fellow animals to other movements for liberation that have occurred in previous generations and that are occurring now. So we're really getting interested in how these changes sweep across whole societies, and how to facilitate more understanding about all those causes are really one underlying cause.
Thank you so much, James, for joining us on the show today and sharing information about your wonderful organization, Tribe of Heart. For more information, please go to www.tribeofheart.com. And also, if you missed Animal Voices and Drishti Point's screening of Peaceable Kingdom, The Journey Home, luckily, Liberation BC is also hosting a screening. This will take place on March 13th from 6 to 9 p.m. It's free admission, and it will be hosted at the Rio Theatre on East Broadway. So for more info, go to liberationbc.org and check out under News and Events. All right, so thank you for everyone for joining us on the show today. You are listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. On next week's show, we will be interviewing Melissa Balfour about the exciting upcoming Vancouver Vegan Prom. Also, we'll be speaking with Dr. Stephen Wise, president of Non-Human Rights Project, and the work coming up in the next few months regarding getting legal status for non-human animals. We here at Animal Voices Show modestly ask that you keep connected with Animal Voices via the World Wide Web. You can do so by signing up for our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Also, please check out our website, animalvoices.org, where our shows can be downloaded. And if you appreciate the work that we do, we ask you to please show us your support by making a donation at Co-op Radio. Stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith, and thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices, and be kind to the animals. We're closing with a song called What Me Eat by Maccabee for all you vegans who are tired of getting asked, what do you eat?
Salamata. I tell and a vegan, we're vegan. I and I eat from the earth and need the animals to give birth. No deaders, no fur, no feathers. When I tell people I don't eat meat, fish or dairy, then look for me strangely. Then I realize I eat a very wide variety. Listen to Maccabee. Yo, how when me eat, them I wanna when me eat. When me tell him, say me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How when me eat, them I wanna when me yum. When me tell him, say that I'm a vegan, man. How when me eat, them I wanna when me eat. When me tell him, say me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How when me eat, them I wanna when me yum. When me tell him, say that I'm a vegan. When me no eat no meat, no fish, no cheese, nah, no egg. Nothing with no foot, no eye, no wing, nah, no head. Nothing with no lip, no ears, no tongue, nah, no leg. Prefer fruit and vegetables instead. Me careful and me choose about what I'm eating. Me medicine, me food is me medicine. When me tell people that me not eat them, they think. They look at me and scratch them chin and start wondering. How when me eat them, I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How when me eat them, I wonder when me yum. When me tell them, say that I'm a vegan. How when me eat them, I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How when me eat them, I wonder when me eat. You want hear what me eat? Yo! I eat calaloo, aki, sweet potato, yam, banana, and tomato, cabbage, spinach, avocado, chocho, butter, bean, and cocoa, courgette, millet, plantain, rice, and peas, and pumpkin, mango, dates, and guava, chickpeas, and cassava, Brussels sprouts, and cauliflower, onion, fennel, and cucumber, plum, pear, and papaya, aubergine, and saya, lime, lentils, and quinoa, oatmeal, bread, and oatmeal flour, watercress, and okra, tofu, and sweet pepper, couscous, and carrot, broccoli, and coconut, peaches, apples, apricot, red fruit, jackfruit, sour sap, pistachios, cashews, and almonds, walnut, peanut, also pecan, sesame seeds, some flour, lemon, orange, pineapple and melon, bogo wheat and garlic, kiwi corn and turnip, pacho and pomegranate, hijiki and rocket berries, cherries and strawberries, peach, grapefruit and celery. You see the meat's not necessary. We tell them say, how when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell them say me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How when me eat, them I wonder when me yum. When me tell them say that I'm a vegan, man. How when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell them say me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How when me eat, them I wonder when me yum. When me tell them say that I'm a vegan. Hey, look how me big and me say look how me strong. Some people can't believe that me a vegetarian. If you want a healthy body, check the real Rasta man. Cause Rasta man will tell you about the right nutrition. Me get me calcium, me sodium, me get potassium. Me get me zinc, me get me iron and me magnesium. Instead of yam, the fish me yam, what the fish yam. Like the kelp and Irish monster growing at the ocean. Me get me proteins and me minerals. Me get me calories, the vitamins A, the B, the C, the D, the E, the F, the G. Essential fatty acid like the omega 3. Me get me fiber and me carbohydrates in my body. Don't forget your water, drink a few glass a day. The toxins in your body, just flush them away. Some of the things you eat, stop in your body and decay. When it come to food, I don't play. We tell them, say, I when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say, me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. I when me eat, them I wonder when me yum. When me tell them, say, that I'm a vegan, man. I when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say, me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. I when me eat, them I wonder when me yum. When me tell them, say that I'm a vegan. A lot of people would have stopped eating meat if they had to kill the animal before they could have eat. Look on the way the animal then get treat. Unsanitary condition where some of them keep. We supposed to eat the meat, we would have sharp teeth. You wouldn't need a knife and a fork, you know, see. You can't eat it raw, you have to cook it complete. I put on vegetable seasoning to make it taste sweet. How when me eat them, I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How when me eat them, I wonder when me yum. When me tell them, say that I'm a vegan, man. How when me eat them, I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How when me eat them, I wonder when me yum.